Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you in-depth and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway and beyond. I'm your host, Variety's theater editor, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'll be talking to Lee Pace, an actor you'll recognize from TV shows like Pushing Daisies and Halt and Catch Fire, and movies like Guardians of the Galaxy and The Hobbit. He's currently starring opposite Andrew Garfield and Nathan Lane in Angels in America, now in previews and opening at Broadway's St. James Theater March 25th. He's in the studio with me to talk about Angels, America, tech startups, Middle Earth, Marvel, and more. Hey, Lee. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Gordon. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Angels in America is now in previews, and it's heading towards its opening later this month. How's it going for you?
There's a lot going on, I'll tell you that.
It's a lot. Have you done both parts in a single day yet?
No.
Yeah.
We've only actually previewed the first part.
Okay.
And tonight we have our first preview for Perestroika,
oh,
the second part.
Is that nerve-wracking?
Yes.
It's like nerve-wracking all over again.
It is. I mean, it's nerve-wracking, but it's also really thrilling because, I mean, the play is such a treat to perform in front of the audience. And when we did Millennium for the first time, it's like I knew the play. We've really rehearsed it. I know it. But to kind of have the other half of the conversation kind of speak back was, really moving and kind of incredible. And Perestroika is, honestly, a harder play for me to understand, so I think I'm going to learn a lot tonight.
For a lot of people, I feel like they think that about the second play, because it's sort of about people trying to find their way, and so, I don't know, I feel like it's a little less cleanly structured, because their lives are far less cleanly structured or something.
It's kind of the enigmatic quality of life,
right.
You know, like things don't always add up, and
right.
It's like there's unforeseen kind of turns that
right.
happen for everyone, you know.
And what's it like for you? You're one of the new cast members coming into the show. Was at the National last year, and you are one of the new additions for Broadway. You're filling in. You're taking over a role that Russell Tovey played. What's that like as an actor?
It's been a ton of work. I'll tell you that, because it's everyone else is more familiar with the play than I have been. But I like a lot of work, and everyone's so smart and interested in rediscovering the dynamics of the characters with me playing the role. With Denise and with James and with Nathan, those three kind of primary relationships that I have.
Those are the three people you're on stage with the most. This is Denise Goff, who plays Harper, right? Nathan Lane, who plays Roy Cohn,
and James McCardle,
who plays
Lewis.
Lewis,
yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
And then, you know, Sue Brown, who plays my mother in it, too. I mean,
right.
Joe does have a lot of interactions with people. And we've all, you know, and Marianne has been very interested in, you know.
This is Marianne Elliott, the director.
Yes. Sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
In kind of my approach to it. And you know, I feel very kind of very well supported. I don't feel like it's...
How much do you ever feel like you have to match something that another actor did in that role? Do you ever...
No, I don't. Yeah, not at all. No, it's not. I think it's very different than what they did in London. I didn't see the London one, so I don't know for sure. But I feel like this is the character that I was preparing, you know, before I started rehearsing.
Right. You know? And you've never seen a production of this play, is that right?
No, I've never seen it. I don't know how that's the case.
Nor the HBO, you said.
I haven't seen the HBO, which I don't understand how I didn't see it, because it's something I'm sure I wanted to see, but, you know, you only got so much bandwidth.
Yeah.
But I've known the play for such a long time. I remember when I was in high school and some upperclassmen, this would have been about 95, 96, some upperclassmen had gone to New York to see The Angels in America when it was on Broadway, and they came back talking about it. And I remember sitting backstage at the, you know, in this auditorium space, this massive high school in the suburbs of Houston, Texas.
Were you in a play at that time? Is that where you were?
Well, we just, I mean, I was in the drama club at school.
Of course.
So it's like, I spent like every minute, you know, hanging out backstage at the auditorium.
Right.
We were probably rehearsing, you know, Oliver or something, right, the musical that we were doing. And we were, and I just remember talking about it with, you know, the other 15-year-olds, talking about the AIDS crisis, talking about sexuality, talking about the politics of the 80s, and in a way that, I look back at it now, and I think that's actually kind of extraordinary, that play would have entered my life at that moment in time, and how probably formative that probably was, because it's just so alien to that environment of, you know, suburban,
right,
Texas.
Yeah.
And the points of view were so massive, and I couldn't say how much of it I actually comprehended. I know that I now, looking at it, understand it, you know, with a grown-up set of eyes, you know, and that's because I've thought about it over the years. You know, it comes across, you know, it comes into your mind every once in a while. You think, oh, that's interesting, or you pick up the copy and look at it, and And when I came at it this time, the things that resonated about Joe with me were not things that I think I would have thought about then, you know.
Sure, yeah. This is, you play Joe Pitt, which actually for folks who maybe don't know the play or maybe haven't seen it in a while, tell us about who Joe Pitt is and what his journey is.
Joe Pitt is... I guess the most simple way I can describe him is that he's a very good man. He's a nice man. He's a good man. It's important to him to be good. He's a Mormon, and he's married to a woman named Harper. He's in the orbit of Roy Cohn and a part of Roy Cohn's favor bank.
Right.
And at the beginning of the play, he's offered... the opportunity to move to Washington to become a part of the justice system in a more significant way, and he sees it as the change his life requires. I look at Joe as kind of like he's a contemporary of Mitt Romney or Donald Trump.
Right.
He's I think about him as like Gorsuch today. Mm-hmm. You know, he's someone who has, you know, a huge amount of ambition and a very aggressive understanding of the law. But he's also someone who has very little understanding about himself and actively refuses to acknowledge parts of himself. The analogy I give to myself is that it's like hating your nose, looking at it in the morning, at the mirror in the morning every day and thinking, I don't have a nose. 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 You know, until someone says, you do. You smell with it every day. You use it to breathe every minute of the day. And that's Joe's sexuality. You know, he's homosexual and he doesn't, but you know, he's married to Harper and he loves her very much. I don't know, it's a very complicated thing.
Yeah.
Cause Tony has created a very rich, complicated thing. So I could sit here all day doing the paint by numbers of what he is, but it's
although it's set in the '80s, I feel like a lot of Angels still resonates today with particularly timely things. Is there anything in particular that struck you as you were listening to the play, as you were rehearsing and doing it, that really struck you with really sort of up-to-the-minute resonance?
Well, it's a play about democracy. You know, Lewis has this incredible speech at the end of the first play where he talks about democracy in America and how, despite the best efforts of the right, it continues to spread downwards and outwards among the people. And I look at this play and I look at how much in the world has changed in the 25 years since it was last on Broadway, and it's and how much the play has actually contributed to that to that change, that profound change. There are now people who live very fulfilling long lives with AIDS and HIV. At the time, people were dying at an extraordinary rate. And it's, you know, plays like this that make that happen. Joe is someone who is on the wrong side of the Democratic promise. You know, he's a part of that. He's a soldier in the monolith. Pryor has a speech talking about a longboat that's, you know, escaping a shipwreck. And, you know, there are, you know, people being hurled off the side when they're trying to get the ballast right. And Joe is one of those people who are taking strong people, capable people, who take unnecessary people and throw them into the water because he doesn't think they're necessary.
Right.
But he doesn't know that. You know, he doesn't realize the what that means.
Right.
Yeah. You know, he's just doing what he believes is right.
Should Donald Trump come see this play?
Oh, God, I would love it if Donald Trump came to see this play. Wouldn't that be thrilling to know that he was out there? I think he would see a very different show. That would be a pretty electric energy in that room.
Yeah.
I would say. We should invite him, absolutely. Oh, my God. I mean, but, you know, Roy Cohn is, you know, one of the,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
And played by Nathan Lane, which is such a privilege to be with him on stage every night. And Roy Cohn was, of course, one of Donald Trump's mentors.
Right.
So, yeah, I wonder what the president would make of seeing.
And so your last Broadway show was The Normal Heart, which was, I guess, 6 or 7 years ago, and which is another major title in the sort of canon of gay plays. And so what's next for you? Is there, you know, Torch Song Trilogy is coming up and Boys in the Band. You could
I know. I've never, slip I've, in never there. I've not, I don't have, I've read Boys in the Band years ago. Torch Song Trilogy I haven't read yet, but God, what an exciting time to have all of these plays on Broadway at the same time. And, you know, God, I would think that anyone who really cares about the American theater, you know, what a thing not to miss. I mean, you have to go see these plays.
Right.
You have to see them all and kind of see this conversation that has taken place over the past 30 years. Because, I mean, really, gay identity has been, you know, discussed so much within these plays. You've got, you know, Boys in the Band that took place well before the AIDS crisis.
Right.
And this play that takes place, you know, during the terrifying height of it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that's you know, that's meaningful. That's a big deal.
Yeah. So last year, Halt and Catch Fire, which is the AMC series in which you starred, came to a close after 4 seasons. I feel like it was one of those shows that it started out and not a lot of people watched it. And then as every season, it seemed to grow in stature, and I feel like more and more people were talking about it as it went along. Did you feel like the show got overlooked by a wider audience as you were working on it?
Oh, I don't know. I never know how to analyze what audiences are going to do or why they do it. I know that we all, I feel like, understood the show better the more we did it. Mm. You know, and I loved the way we worked on that show. It felt like I'll speak for the actors, it felt like a real company of actors that we would get together on our own and discuss. We just loved these characters so much, and the writers as well. It just, there was this interesting alchemy with these five people and the different configurations they would find themselves in. And the you know, the things we were talking about in the show just felt, I don't know, personal in all the right ways and interesting.
Yeah, I feel like, in a way, you've been in a number of projects that people can think of as kind of cult favorites. Like, there was Halt and Catch Fire. There was Pushing Daisies, which attracted a lot of theater fans, you know, mm-hmm. with, like, Kristen Chenoweth and Ellen Green, and there was singing and, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. Does that speak to your taste at all in terms of what kind of projects kind of attract your attention, these things that are, like, really passionately loved, but maybe it takes a while to find their kind of wider
Again,
audience?
I don't understand what I don't understand how that works. Yeah. I just don't. It's not what I also don't understand how I find my way to certain things. I wish I could say that there was some strategy, but it's really just, like, things that I like, you know. When I read the pilot for *Halt and Catch Fire*, I just loved the character. I thought he was so like a sociopath, but enigmatic and hopeful in a way. There was this kind of, you know, naive sense of hope to him, but you know, destruction all around him. He's like a, you know, an ill-tempered toddler. Who's but a very powerful toddler. I just found it interesting. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And the same was true with Pushing Daisies. I'd done a show with Brian Fuller in the past.
That was Wonderfalls, yeah?
Yeah, Wonderfalls I'd done. It was like one of the very first jobs I had.
Yeah.
And so I knew Brian and big fan of all the things that he had done since, and consider him, you know, one of my good friends. And I would love to work with him again. So I'm sure that will happen sometime soon because
this is a question. Do they ever talk about bringing Pushing Daisies back in the age of reboots?
Yeah, there's always like a fun kind of like, wouldn't it be fun if this or wouldn't it be fun if that? I mean, whenever I see Anna, we always kind of say, God,
this was your co-star in the show, Anna.
Anna Friel. Yeah. We kind of think, what would that be? It would be so fun to kind of see where Chuck and Ned are today, you know, I think.
I also feel like there is something of a like fan base for a movie you did called The Fall, which I am maybe one of 12 people who saw in the theater and loved. And every time I come across people who have seen that movie, they go, oh, yeah, that movie's really good. Do people ever talk to you about that movie?
Yeah. Actually, that's like the thing that if I ever kind of someone's like, oh, you're the guy from the.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's really The Fall that you know. I'm so proud of that.
Yeah.
And to meet someone who actually saw it in the theater is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it was me and one friend and maybe three or four other people, and we were all like, this is great.
I know. It was also one of the first things that I had done.
Right.
And I remember the whole time we were shooting it, Tarsem was like...
this is the director, Tarsem Singh.
Yeah, Tarsem. It was just kind of like this... He was like, this is extraordinary. It doesn't get better than this. We were like in India and Africa.
Right.
You know, we went to all these different countries.
Yeah, it's a beautiful film.
Shoot little bits. And it's all real.
Yeah.
Like, and you look at how movies are made now, and it's all on green screens. I've been in front of so many green screens.
But, yes, we'll talk about that next. Yes.
But it's like this movie, like we had hiked all the way up to the top of the Himalayas. Us and the whole crew were in this big camp of tents. You know, sitting around a bonfire at night, and then we'd wake up before dawn in the morning, shower in a tent, you know, with a bucket of like ice water, and then kind of put on Eiko Ishioka's incredible costumes.
Yeah, the costumes are amazing. Yep.
And kind of set up cameras in the middle of the, you know, these kind of high mountain deserts. It was the experience of shooting that movie every single day. Was kind of extraordinary. We were in the big fort at Jodhpur, and it would be like, you know, 120 degrees. It was so hot, and I'm in these like, you know, this wool vest and leather trousers, big crazy trousers, and we're running from explosions and these. I mean, it was just like, and then I watched the movie assembled, and I to say that I'm proud of being a part of it is just such an understatement. I see Tarsem. I see the power of a director telling a story that is so authentic to him. You know, I see his just all the quirky, weird things that he likes, like Darwin. You know, and
So The Fall, listeners, if you haven't seen it, you should. It's worth it. And you've also been in quite a few, you alluded to this, but you've been in quite a few projects that don't count at all as cult favorites, right? There's like Guardians of the Galaxy, and there's The Hobbit, and Twilight. These are like, as you said, completely different kinds of movies, like with huge casts and like enormous special effects budgets. And what's it like as an actor for you to go into projects like this? Is it fun?
Yeah, absolutely fun. I mean, there's no kind of finding yourself, you know, dressed as an elven king looking, you know, across a battlefield at Ian McKellen dressed as a wizard and not thinking, I love my life.
Right.
I mean, this is, you know, it's that was pretty that was an extraordinary experience shooting those movies. But completely different than,
right,
you know,
yeah,
anything else I've ever done.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so are you done in the Marvel universe? I feel like at the end, spoiler alert, at the end of the first Guardians, it seemed like Ronan was maybe not alive at the end. Do you feel like that's right? What do you know?
I know nothing. I know nothing. I'm sucked into an Infinity Stone and...
Oh, well, then you could totally be back.
That's as much as I know. I mean, I imagine it's probably very difficult to be extracted from
I don't know. They have a whole series of movies coming out about Infinity Stones? So you might be getting a call. I don't know. And you have a movie coming out soonish called Driven, is that right? With you play Lee Iacocca?
No, I play John DeLorean.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, weird. I think that's similar wrong on IMDb. Yeah, exactly.
It's the way to...
Well, I'll check that. Is that also set in the 80s?
It is set in the 80s,
All right. You've got a whole sort of trilogy of work happening with the 80s. Yeah. What can you tell us about Driven?
We shot it down in Puerto Rico right after the hurricane.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And that was a pretty... unique experience, kind of seeing that island rebuild and being, you know, a small part of that, which was a real privilege, and very moving. I haven't seen the movie. I really enjoyed learning about John DeLorean. Mm. He was such an incredible character to play. He's, you know, such a... Well, I was about to say that he's someone who kind of doesn't exist anymore, but you kind of look at a Donald Trump and absolutely there's always mm-hmm. guys like that around, right. You know. But I really have a lot of affection for him. I think that there's something magical about someone that pursues a dream the way mm-hmm. he, and very, very, very American.
Yeah, right.
You know.
And what's next on your plate after you're in Angels through, when is it, July? I forget.
July.
Oh, it is July. Great. And then what?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully something, because I like to work.
Yeah.
But
is it important to you that theater always be kind of a thing that you come back to sometimes?
Very, very important to me. It's I feel so lucky to be a part of this community. I felt like I was aware of this community before I'd even been to New York, like I was saying, back in high school. I remember watching the Tonys and being aware of all the plays that were, you know, all the actors that were going to be nominated and having opinions before. I'd never even seen the plays before. You know, I'd never seen the plays.
Right.
So I did off Broadway for years and years.
Yeah. Right.
I have such memories of all those times. You know, it's like you just have memories of being on stage with, you know, Annie Paris in the first play that I ever did, and Glenn Howard and mm-hmm. E. Catherine Kerr, this play I did called Credo Canvas at mm-hmm. Playwrights Horizons. And I was like fresh out of school, and I just remember the thrill of being...
You went to Juilliard, is that right?
Yeah. That's right, yeah. Just being the thrill of like actually getting paid to mm-hmm. be able to act on stage in New York, and you know, kind of feeling the same thing when they asked me to be a part of Normal Heart on Broadway for the first time. Yeah. It was just like I just pinch myself and think, it's such a dream come true to be a part of this community. Yeah. You know, and when I say the community, it's not just the people who are making the plays and acting in the plays; it's the audience. You know, because there's this committed group of connoisseurs who see all of the plays, you know, and watch the performances and watch the revivals, you know, and have saw the first Angels in America and are seeing this, you know, Angels in America. You know, we were talking about Bernadette Peters and
Hello Dolly, yeah.
You know, who have seen Bernadette Peters, you know, for all of these years, right. Who cannot miss her in Hello Dolly. Like, if you care about theater, you have to see that performance. Right. And I still have to see it. Yeah. You know, so that's, it's one of the meaningful things in my life that I get to still be a part of this community. Yeah.
Are you a superstitious stage actor? Are there things that you have to do before a performance? Or, for instance, before your first performance of Part 2 of Angels in America, for instance?
Not really. I mean, sometimes Denise will give me one of her crystals to carry in my pocket before I go on stage.
Does it help?
I've had a good time so far, so now that it occurs to me now that I shouldn't go on stage without a crystal in my pocket, right. Not really. I think it's the only thing I do feel strongly about is just feeling kind of relaxed and to have a good time with it, you know, because this is one of the best jobs in the world, and I feel so lucky to do it. So if I'm not having a good time with it, then I'm doing it wrong.
We'll have a great time with it tonight. Can't wait to see it. Thanks for being here. Nice to talk to you. Thanks.
I appreciate it.
That was Lee Pace, the actor from Halt and Catch Fire and the Guardians of the Galaxy, who's now appearing on Broadway in Angels in America. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I'll talk to Robert Greenblatt, who has a very important day job as the chairman of NBC Entertainment, but he moonlights as a theater fan and producer, and is the man behind NBC's theater-centric shows like Smash, The Sound of Music Live, and Rise, the new series that people are calling Friday Night Lights, but with musicals. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.